Welcome to our Favorite Things podcast, hosted by your fave Nigerian best friend duo, Tiesa.
And your girl, Mofi. Our show is a space for Black folks in the diaspora and at home to feel warm, seen, and informed through conversations about life, community, and a bit of social critique.
Come for our faves, stay for the laughs. Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Thank you all so much for hanging with us today. We hope you're doing well. If you are new here, welcome. And if you're not, thanks for coming back. We love having y'all listening to us and spending time with us for this hour or however long we tend to record for. So anyway, grab your favorite drink, kick your legs up, and let's get into the episode. Mofi, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm feeling a lot better today than, say, yesterday or even, like, this week or the week that passed for previous to us recording. I'm feeling better. Yesterday was just a lot. I feel like I was just feeling a lot of, like, overwhelm. Like, I had so much to do, not even, like, work-wise, but just, like, feeling like, I don't know if it's the stage of adulting where it's, like, there's just so much to get done.
And all it feels the time.
Like, yeah, it feels like there's not enough time. And you also just want to, like, chill. Like, I just wanted to, like, chill. So I was struggling with that a bit. Yeah. But something I also noticed was the impact of what I was consuming on, like, my well-being, like, or on how I was feeling. So I started watching this Netflix docu thing called Bad Vegan.
And I've seen that.
You've seen it?
I've seen it. They're heavily marketing it to me on my Netflix. Oh,
like when you haven't watched it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just realized that it was just like making me feel on edge. Like I was feeling intensely on edge. So in addition to just feeling overwhelmed, my emotions were just like, I almost felt like I wasn't even breathing. And then I just saw some stuff on Twitter as well.
Yeah.
Where like some folks or somebody on Nigerian Twitter was being transphobic. I feel like it's become like someone was like, did somebody like, is there somewhere in the Nigerian feminist like WhatsApp group where they're like, you know, you have to like
today
show your transphobia so that we know if you still belong, because like another person was being transphobic and it really just threw me off. Like it just made me really upset as well. So combination of all of those things, like my day just went from like being like, well, okay, like I'm feeling overwhelmed, to just like now I'm in a really bad mood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So it was okay. I mean, it was stressful, and then I called my lover, and like they just like helped me. I don't know. It was just a lot. I was really feeling heavy, so it was just like, okay, how about like we play some meditation. So they put on some meditation. So I was like listening to it, like crying with all of my tears. These days I've just been crying a lot. And eventually I was like, you know, I'm going to go for a walk. So I went for a walk. It was nice out. And yeah. And when I came back, I was like, all right, I feel good. Yeah.
No, I love that. I was going to ask you why you think Bad Vegan like incited those feelings.
I think that, first of all, one thing I was noticing was the music choice. Like, sometimes on these shows, like, the background music is very, like, not even somber, but, like, I don't know how to describe how, like, what the music sounds like. But it's just kind of, like, very, like, intense type of music. So I think that contributed. But in addition to that, I think that I'm not really enjoying shows that, like, I don't know, Netflix has been doing all of these scammy shows, and I don't think I enjoy it.
Yes.
I don't think I enjoy, like, this, like, the concept of being, like, cheated or lied to. But one thing that's actually common, that's a common thread on all these three, so Tinder Swindler, Inventing Anna, and at least the ones I've seen, and now Bad Vegan, is that there's a lot of abuse that happens, like, verbal.
Yep.
Emotional, like manipulation. Mm-hmm. And I think it just makes me hella uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there feeling uncomfortable, watching these people go through so much shit, or other people in their lives go through so much shit. And it's like this like existential piece for me. I feel like I start feeling those emotions, and I'm hella uncomfortable. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. And now that you're saying that, I remember reading the synopsis for Bad Vegan and being like, okay, Netflix, I'm over the scammy shows. I'm over, seeing white people scamming people and hurting people. I'm actually over watching that for entertainment. It's okay. Like, maybe we'll come back to it another time. I'm not in the mood. So I completely agree with you.
Yeah. How about you? How you doing?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm okay. That's the usual preamble. But this week has felt like a lot. Like, I had a lot of things to get out this week. And by the time Friday came, it was just even a struggle for me to get out of bed because I was just so exhausted. Like, everything felt like a lot. And as you said in the beginning, the to-do list just feels never ending. And sometimes I've realized that I just have to not like forget about it. I just have to be like, okay, I'm not addressing the to-do list today. I'm not. I need a break. I need a mental break. I lay down, I read, I finished reading a book I was reading. I started Nearly All the Men in Lagos Are Mad. Like, I just needed some time to myself. And so yeah, that was helpful. And it just feels like I'm going easefully into my weekend, which I need.
It's necessary. Like, I think sometimes we just have to be like, yes, I know we have things to do. I know that there's a lot that needs to be done, but you just need to take a break. You just need to rest. You just need to forget about it because it will always be there tomorrow. It will always be there the following
Literally,
days.
literally.
And how much of it is like pressing in that moment?
Exactly. My therapist was like, write down what is, are you going to, do you need to worry about this right now? Or do you need to worry about it in 6 hours or in 12 hours or in 6 months? I was like, I like the 6 months one. But it's true because everything, sometimes I put everything into this box of I need to deal with it now, 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 now. And that's just not sustainable. It can't happen.
Yeah, it sucks. Like, adulting is so much, and I just wanted to, like, I don't even know. In some ways, I saw a tweet. I feel like, did I say this on? No, we didn't say this on the podcast the last time we recorded, but I saw a tweet that said, like, check on your friends in Nigeria because, like, life is hard. So, just like, also just holding space for, like, all my folks in Nigeria right now.
Yes.
In addition to, like, just having to do life and be stressed, then the country that you're living in is like, okay, let's even make it five
Let's make
times
it
or 10
worse.
times even worse for you. There's no, like, as of today in which we're recording, I don't know when, folks will be listening to it, but, like, right now, so, like, mid-March-ish, and started, like, way earlier than that, like, there's no light, the price of well is like times how much ever, like, it's doubling and
Astronomical.
tripling, and
Gosh.
people have to live, people have to exist, and I don't know how that's possible if there's no electricity, like, at the
Yeah.
basic level.
Yeah. Electricity, no water. It's just,
You
yeah.
can't do nothing.
You can't do anything. You can't do anything.
So just holding so much space, just, I don't even know, it doesn't make sense to me. But in addition to, as we said, in addition to adulting, then you have to, like, figure out how to exist and how to still
Yeah.
dream and how to have hope and
Yeah.
how to do everything all at once.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Oh gosh. Okay. Apologies. We didn't mean to. I hope this whole thing didn't just make you sad if you're listening, but
Oh,
we have
true.
to. It's the realities. It's the realities of life.
No, definitely. Just use this episode as a bit of a distraction. I don't know how much it's going to distract you from what's going on. But what we have next is a continuation of our conversation with Salem. If you had not listened to the first part, I would suggest, taking a pause and going to listen to our previous episode, with Salem, where we kind of started, like, the introduction, talked a little bit about International Women's Day, our feelings around, the significance of the day. And on this second part, we are talking about, work, what, like, reimagining the future of work could look like, what our feelings about, like, 9 to 5 versus, like, entrepreneurship, the highs, the lows, the joys, the, like, all of the things about that. So yeah, so that's what we have for you for this episode. I hope you enjoy it. I hope that you learn a few things. I hope that things resonate with you as well. And we'll be looking forward to hear your thoughts on social media and stuff when you do listen. So in talking about breaking biases, let's talk about the future of work. I think that both Tiesa and I currently are 9-to-5ers. And Salem, I'm assuming you're not.
I'm not.
Just based on that info. So I just wanted to just talk a little bit about that. I think that, you know, these days a lot of folks are transitioning, especially like following the pandemic. And today, this weekend actually is the weekend 2 years ago where world stopped, essentially. So maybe it's a nice time to talk about this.
True.
Yeah. March 2020, our lives changed. So drastically. Yeah, but okay, so maybe you can tell us a little bit about your transition. Had you been working in 9-to-5 before and then transitioned, and why did you do that? Maybe let's just start there.
Yes. So March 2020, exactly this time, I finished hanging out with Tiesa and the girls and was very much like, okay, I'm just gonna like go to this hotel. There's like this virus thing that's coming up, but you know, I'm just going to, like, go hang out in San Francisco by myself. And I think that might have been the last time I saw you for a while, until December. I was like, let me just go. And then the world stopped. And I was working a 9-to-5 at the time. Leading up to that, I kind of changed my work. I kind of changed my work schedule and my work pace to working part-time. Leading up to the new year, I wanted to spend December of 2019 traveling and just wanted a more humane pace for my work. So I'd gone down from a 40-hour work week to about a 30-hour work week, and I was working 3 days a week and had like Thursdays to Mondays off. So I was working Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. And that felt, it was a lot, but my intention was just to do that for 6 months, get some travel under my belt, get some time to be with my family, do some writing. And the plan was to transition back to full-time in March. So when March came, I was having some kind of like internal conversations with myself around what do I want to do. I'd always known I wanted to be an entrepreneur, and I'd actually tried entrepreneurship, like full-time entrepreneurship once, and wasn't really successful. And that was why I went back to the corporate world. So I'm trained as a lawyer and a policy person. So I went back to the corporate world. I enjoyed it for the most part. I just felt like I didn't have time to travel. I didn't have time to do some of the other things I wanted to do, like writing. And so those were kind of my only things. But I enjoyed the pay. I enjoyed the community. I enjoyed the work. I didn't really love my work, like my supervisor, my manager. I didn't love some of the dynamics there, but it still felt doable. Well, the pandemic changed everything for me because I had like two bills that were coming up for hearing that immediately got canceled because everyone was like, all right, we only need to focus on priority bills. And I'd been working on these bills for 2 years. So it was leading up to these bills being passed and everything just being put on hold gave me this opportunity to say, okay, do I want to kind of continue this or do I want to shift into doing something else? Do I want to work somewhere else? I was having some tension with my workplace because even though they had gone remote, they were still expecting the same kind of quality of work. And it was like, guys, we're in a pandemic. Like, no one knows what's going on. But the workplaces at the time were like, no, we just have to push through, move forward. This is only going to be like a short-term thing. So we have to, like, you know, keep the same pace going, reintroduce new projects. And I just remember feeling so overwhelmed after a meeting with the supervisor who was like, yeah, we have to start thinking about post-pandemic policy options today. And I was like, the pandemic has just started. I was like, I don't know who I'm going to be post-pandemic. I can't even imagine post-pandemic. I'm still trying to wrap my head around pandemic. And we're already trying to say, okay, in a post-pandemic world, like these are the policy solutions we'll need. And I was just like, whoa, that, like, I can't work in that way. So I started having these more existential questions about being in a 9-to-5 setting. And my immediate answer wasn't to leave the 9-to-5 setting. It was just to leave my job at the time and transition into something else. But then just the job search process was so dehumanizing to me that I was like, look, let me just take on a client. So, like, let me take on one client. I'd wanted to shift into doing a little bit more consulting, a little bit more coaching work. So the goal was, let me just take on one client right now and use that to pay my bills, but just take things slowly for a little bit and decide what I want my next steps to be. And then in June of 2020, my grandfather passed away. And I think for me, that was such a catalytic moment because my world stopped for like a month, and I just needed to be in grief. And in the process of that grief, coming out from the grief, I just knew that my priorities had to be different. I had to live differently. My grandfather had spent all of his life in service of the community, you know, and both of my parents had to. And I was just like, I don't want to live a life that's always in service. I want to live a life that feels good to me and be of service, but I don't want my life to be bound up in making the world better, that I miss enjoying the world and I miss enjoying certain things. And so being honest with myself, I was like, well, I don't want to work a 40-hour work week. And the only way to do that was to work for myself. And so slowly over that next year, I transitioned into starting my own firm, Afangide Global. And initially, it was just to be a space where, like, I worked for myself. And, you know, as I started working with other people who were transitioning as well from 9 to 5, it became a collective of us and had some more team members. But, yeah, that was my journey out of the 9 to 5. It was not immediate. It wasn't instant. It was a series of processes and deliberations. And, you know, sometimes there are things I still miss now about the 9 to 5. I haven't worked a 9 to 5 in 2 years. So I miss the steady paychecks that come in. I miss that. But I think that's about the only thing I miss, to be honest.
Yeah.
The only thing I miss.
Why are we all here?
Right. The only thing I miss. And just as someone who's my friend, like, I've written more. I feel like I'm more available as a friend. I'm happier. I've had so much more time to spend with my family, my friends, my loved ones, to be able to support people who I really care about as they navigate transitions through the pandemic. And I've just had time to like take naps and frolic, you know, and just be a human being.
Yeah.
I think so much about how much work takes up for so many people. And how that's just like expected to be the case. And at the same time, because a lot of folks are either talking about like going into entrepreneurship, or, you know, I hear like a lot of folks now talk about, you know, it's important to have multiple streams of income. And like those conversations stress me out, because I'm like, the extent to which work takes from me right now to even start thinking about how to then like have other streams of income. And I know folks talk about, like, you know, it could be investments, it could be so many other things, so you don't have it's not like actively working or whatever. But it's still a lot to have to figure out, and not everybody even has access to those types of information. Like, you have to go and find it out if you're not like privileged to have like family members or other folks that already have that information. But I'm curious, if like even the concept of entrepreneurship, like, is it attainable for so many people? And is it sustainable? Like, that's something that I wonder about as well.
If you ask Kim Kardashian, it definitely is. All you have to do is work.
All you have to do is get up and work.
Okay? What do you mean? What are you stressed about? Work.
And like, Kim Kardashian has failed the bar 3 times. And not to be that person, I'm just like, bitch, you couldn't even pass the bar. Come back and talk to me when you pass the bar. All you have to do is study, bitch. All you have to do is study. Like, I was so annoyed when I saw that. I was so annoyed.
I couldn't believe her. I honestly could not believe her. Anyway, sorry, please, if you can remember Mophie's question.
Is entrepreneurship sustainable?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So here's the thing. I think there are sacrifices that have to be made with entrepreneurship, and privileges that you have to have to be able for entrepreneurship to be an option. For instance, for me, I knew that the only way I could be an entrepreneur and invest in entrepreneurship was to move back home with my parents, because I couldn't pay that California rent as a newbie entrepreneur. Like, I couldn't. I just knew what was available to me. I knew what my expenses were. I was honest with myself about what my money looked like, and I knew that I couldn't. And so in making the decision to take away rent, to not be rent burdened, to take away rent from my list of expenses, which was a huge chunk of my paycheck, and honestly, to take away, like, you know, utilities bills, most bills, and take away like feeding money, you know, I just knew that no matter how much I was bringing in per month, I wouldn't starve. For me, that was helpful to get into a healthy entrepreneurship mindset. For some people, the pressure makes them like go out and grind, but I'm a tough girl. Like I don't need pressure. Doesn't make me want to grind. Pressure makes me want to fumble and like take a nap. So if you're driven, like I think the personality of certain people who tend to thrive in entrepreneurship and who are highlighted as entrepreneurs are people who are really fueled by that pressure and who are natural go-getters. But when you're someone who's naturally introverted, you have to do entrepreneurship differently. When you're someone who just naturally is a softer type of person, you have to do entrepreneurship differently. And it's not that entrepreneurship is not accessible. It's just entrepreneurship in the ways that people talk about entrepreneurship is not accessible. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the first mindset changes I had to have for me going in the second time, because the first time I did it, I was very much trying to be like boss babe. And I realized that like boss babe was not necessarily accessible to me, you know, and I feel like, I don't know if that word and the way I'm saying it translates to people, but I feel like people who are in that boss babe bubble, like kind of understand, or who are associated in it, kind of understand. And it was just like, ah, babe, like I am not, for me, that looked like going to court, you know, going to court long hours, sitting in the courtroom, calling clients, that was other clients while I'm in the waiting room for others, and then come back and put in like 3 or 4 other hours of work, and then, you know, crash and wake up the next day, fill myself with coffee, go to the gym, like...
That sounds exhausting.
Yo, yeah, like that was so exhausting to me, and that was the reason why I crashed. And I think to me that was the reason why I wasn't successful or as successful as I would have wanted to be. This go around, in creating a new model for entrepreneurship, I really thought about like my grandmother in the village. I was like, okay, my grandmother had her farm, sold her crops, and had enough to take care of herself for years, decades, right? And so if this is going to be a model for me, like what does that look like? And when you center that kind of like village woman like thing, it's like, okay, relationship building, right? Like people who could support her when she needed the support that she maybe could not provide herself with. So and then people who could, who were her customers, people who she could rely on to know that they would count on her for her expertise. So in building my differently, I really had to center that perspective and that way of doing business over the ways that we've been taught around entrepreneurship and multiple streams of income and the grind and hustle and all of that.
Wow. Yeah. Don't say our faith pause didn't teach you all anything, right? You guys are taking notes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That makes sense. Jesse, how about you? How do you feel about like 9 to 5 versus like entrepreneurship?
Girl, you know how I feel. I'm honestly, I was having a chat with someone yesterday who reached out to me because like my office did this like highlights of remote workers, whatever. Anyway, it was just like a little like interview of like what I'm doing, what I'm working on and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, this is how this person found me, and they reached out to me just to talk to me about what I'm doing because they're thinking about going into global health. And it's so interesting because we ended up halfway into the conversation talking about like transitioning away from being in this very strict 9 to 5 scenario and like what are other ways that we can contribute to public health and engage with public health projects and initiatives without this 9 to 5 structure. And at first I thought taking the conversation that way, I was like, damn, I'm not really being helpful to this person who has told me they want to get a master's and they want to know like how to get to where I am in public health. But she ended up receiving it very well and kind of telling me how it's, you know, cool that I've brought up certain things because she's creative as well. She's like working on writing. She enjoys traveling. And so it's just nice to kind of talk to somebody who, I don't know, who she feels like she can share that with as well, and how she, you know, she doesn't feel like she has to be, you know, kind of stuck in this very specific bubble. So all that to say that I am personally in a point in my life where I want to transition from 9 to 5 because I do feel like it's, I think it's Mofi that said something about that, it's draining. It's really draining on me to work in this specific kind of way. I think I can still do the work in community that I want to do without it looking like me waking up at taking 7 a.m. calls and then sometimes not closing my laptop till 7 p.m. It's like, okay, I get work done, but to like what, like at whose expense, you know, like it's me passing out on my floor at 3 p.m. or me like being exhausted throughout my days or like not really being able to show up for my friends and my family and like people I love or even show up for myself. So I feel like, and maybe there are people who work 9 to 5s where it doesn't feel like that. and I'm happy for you. But even in a work environment like mine that is fairly flexible, there is still a lot of work to do and a lot of pressure that comes with it and all of the things that come with 9-to-5s, the hierarchy, the pressure, the pressure to like perform in a certain way or at a certain level. So yeah, while I don't think I necessarily am fully wanting to be like an entrepreneur, I do think I want to find like a balance between 9-to-5 and kind of doing my own thing essentially. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Because for me, my biggest like pull to an entrepreneurship type of life, that I was that person like Salam, I think like growing up, like where I was like, I would never be an entrepreneur because I don't really want to like wake up and do my own thing. I just want somebody to be like, okay, yeah, here's how we do this work, and I just like produce and go home. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I thought about work before. As I've grown older and obviously gained so much perspective and stuff,
yeah,
the reason why I am more inclined to like step away from like this like corporate way of working is just to be able to be in a space where I can reimagine what work looks like.
Looks like, yes, exactly.
Like, it's not even, because I'm imagining that even if you're an entrepreneur, maybe you'd have to wake up and make that 7 o'clock call because like, mm-hmm, you know, business looks very different. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you're working even many, many hours a week or whatever, depending on the flow and the ebbs and everything. Mm-hmm. Work could look very different and it could still be busy, which I still hate, but I think our capitalist society has kind of created it in that way. But how can we create work where, or how can I be in a work environment where I feel like I can show up as myself? Right. I think I had seen either your tweet, Salem, or on Instagram, where you were like, I'm wearing, I forget what you were wearing, but you're like, you know, what's nice about having a team of all African women is that I can show up however without having to think too much about how I'm showing up. Is this okay? Is this appropriate? Mm-hmm. You know, I had to come back to Canada earlier than I anticipated because my employer was like, no, you have to be around, essentially. And I'm like, right now, what's important to me is being able to be by my family. It's being able to be by my partner. That, like, that's what support looks like. Mm-hmm. And if I can receive the support, then I'm a better person and I'm a better person to work. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's not important to an employer. They just, they're just like, you know, this is what we want and you have to do
it. Have to do it.
So for me, like, the pool is just being able to create like work where, like, if at this point in life and in society people have to work, then how can we make work a place that like at least people can exist okay, in an okay way, in a way that they feel like they're people, in a way that they feel that they're cared for, in a way that they feel that they're valued, and in a way that it's not just all about like production. And I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it in my workspace and like in the type of work that I do, especially as sensitive as it is, like talking about anti-blackness and anti-racism so often. It's like, you still want me to be able to like come into the office 5 days a week. Yes. What about that like makes sense to you, especially like post pandemic? Especially after 2 years of living in a global pandemic, and we've talked about how work needs to be like revolutionized, it's still going back to where like where we were in 2020. And that is like, it's so disappointing. I've never felt more disappointed in our society, to be honest, because I thought we're going to come out of this and like we're going to see some change, and maybe there's been incremental change here and there, but it's not even close to where I think we should have been right now. So for me, that's kind of where I'm sitting right now and thinking about like shifting work, because I want to be able to say, you know what, I'm going home to Nigeria because I need this.
Yeah.
Why am I in this, on this, on these lands that are so foreign to my person, essentially, are so foreign to my ancestors, never like really existed in this kind of climate. So why do I need to be here and still be able to do my job and still be able to do work or impact community, you know? But it shouldn't, as you said, when you were talking about your grandmother, like, it's like, you know, she was contributing to community, but it wasn't like her whole existence was a mix. And I think that in working in this way, they want your whole existence to be work.
Yeah.
And then you get the crumbs of your life here and there.
Right.
There was something that my housemate, who recently dropped down to part-time, she said, and it really resonated with me, and it kind of aligns with something you both have said. And she said, why am I like, basically she had said, like, why am I I'm living life based on like whatever else little time I have, like after work, like that's when I get to like live my life, like they have everything, and then whatever crumbs is what I get and I have to work with, like it's my life, it's like it's work first, then half a weekend is now belonging to me, you know? So why? There should be some way to have it where you're not completely consumed and completely overtaken by a lot of times these very toxic ways of living, like, yeah, and of existing. Like, you can't show up like yourself in your workplace, so like you're clenched for 5 days a week, mm-hmm, you know, you can't actually really breathe unless you're not at work. So mm-hmm, how is that affecting us? And yeah,
so I found there's this quote that I'm gonna read, and it's by Khalil Gibran. And you know, I love poetry and I love like philosophy, so people who live at the intersection of both of those are some of my favorite people. But he says, and what is it to work with love? It is to weave the cloth with threads drawn from your heart, even as if your beloved were to wear that cloth. It is to build a house with affection, as if your beloved were to dwell in that house. It is to sow seeds with tenderness and reap the harvest with joy, as if your beloved were eating the fruit. It is to charge all things you fashion with the breath of your own spirit, and to know that all the blessed dead are standing about you and watching. And I first came across that quote when, quote poem thing, when I left work and just took some time to reflect on what did I want my work to look like, and what even, like, was work a capitalist construct, or does work predate capitalism? And that was one of the big questions I asked myself, and like, how do I define work? And, you know, thinking back to, you know, pre-colonial Africa, which again is a problematic construct in itself, but I think we can see examples more clearly. And when you go to these rural, remote areas where you see that people's work was less about exploitation and more about contribution in ways that were possible for them. And so you see people being like, okay, I like to farm, so I'm going to plant things. I'm going to have somebody come and sell these things that I'm planting. And then, you know, so even if I'm batchering, I'm exchanging this planting for somebody else's chicken that I'll use for my own dinner, right? And so you have these ways of existing that did include work, but did not,
yeah,
like, focal work in life. Work was just a part of your life. It wasn't the focus of one's life. And that was one of the big things that, like you said, T, and you said as well, that was one of the things that had to change for me in how I am viewing my work and how I'm moving through my life as someone who works.
Yeah.
Because so we define so much of our identities, because we spend a lot of time doing work, we now define so much of our identities around our work and the things we do, and just don't even know how to show up as people anymore. And that's terrifying.
It's so scary. But, curious if you could tell us a little bit more about your consulting, your coaching group, business, all of that stuff, to, as we like wrap up this conversation. And let's take it from
there. Let's dive into it. Yes. So like I said, my firm is called Afanide Global. It started out as a firm of one. And the reason why I made the switch from more legal to consulting and coaching was A, because I wanted to work with people. And B, because when you're an advocate in the policy and legal world, you're almost begging the system to change. So you're always going with like, here's why you should change. Like, and when you walk into the room as an advocate, like, people are already rolling their eyes who don't want you to be in the room. But so much of your work relies on you to be in rooms with people who you need to teach why you're important and the work you do is important. And that was not good for me as a Black woman, as an African Black woman, to walk into spaces knowing that I was already not welcome and I had to prove why I was needed. And so in shifting that, the work then became, who do people value? And it was like, the people who value the work that I do actually value consultants. And I was like, okay, who are the African women consultants on the scene? And there are very few African women who consult, you know? And so many of us are still always being kept in roles where we're given the busy work, but never really given the positions of expertise where we're getting to call the shots. And so in changing how I do work, I was like, well, I want to call the shots because I'm a brilliant person. I have the answers to a lot of things based on the work I've done, based on research I've done. And I have the community of people who I can do this kind of work with. And so it shifted from just a me-centered thing to a community of, I think we have about a team of 7 now, but at some point we were a team of 12. And we've had some consultants and coaches who come along. We work in a very multidisciplinary way, and we work on issues from racial justice, mental health, public policy, with like health policy, environmental justice policy, climate justice policy, all the way to like the personal, which is our coaching division, which works on like spiritual coaching, helping people with early career stuff, helping people move through like building businesses to business coaching. My favorite kind of coaching group that I offer right now is kind of in line with this conversation. It's called Lean Out. And this coaching, you know, if anyone has heard of the Sheryl Sandberg Lean In book, it was all about how we were supposed to like lean in so we can make it at work. But as a lot of us are navigating these periods of like the great resignation, as they call it, or the great emancipation, as I choose to call it, we like so much of the first step of that is really just leaning out, like taking a step back and looking at what are the things we've been sold? Like the myth of stability only being found through a 9-to-5 is something that we need to kind of unpack before we can even make the move of going into a 9-to-5. Some of the spaces that we've grown up seeing as safe, so like people who are navigating, for instance, like their church's response to everything over the last 2 years and really feeling like, oh, this is a space that I counted on to be a space that would care for community, and not seeing that, like, how do we lean out from all of the things that we've been taught, that we've been sold, will bring us joy and safety and comfort, and really start to build these infrastructures ourselves or connect up with people who are already building these infrastructures? And so that's the kind of work that we do at AG. We really think through like systemic change from both the personal, the political, and the professional, well, whole person. And we try to create policies and programs, workshops that integrate all of that change. That's the short form.
I love it. Necessary, and I do agree that there are not many like African women in the consulting space, and we definitely need to be taking up a lot of that space, because people will be doing like all the things out there, and you know, many folks are creating consultancies. Like, there's many like white men and folks that are very, very privileged, but also don't have a lot of the lived experience and the perspectives to also even talk about like deconstructing and reimagining, I don't know, systems and thinking about systemic change as well. But it will be lovely to have you on maybe at another point on the podcast to maybe dive a little bit more deeper into some of these themes and topics that we've touched on a little bit.
Yeah, I'd love to be back. I feel like at this point now I was a listener and now I'm a friend of the podcast. Okay, I've been
yes.
As a friend of the podcast, I'm happy to be back.
Love it. We love having friends of the podcast. All right. Now to my favorite part of the podcast. Here are a few of our favorite things. Mophie, take us away.
All right. So like, obviously everybody is talking about this book. If you haven't seen it by now, if you haven't heard of it by now, it's called Vagabonds by Elohosa Osunde. So just Google Elo, like, you know, check out her work, check out what she writes about. Such a phenomenal writer. And she has released a book, just telling stories about who has been called vagabonds by the Nigerian constitution, and essentially like reclaiming that title, reclaiming the naming, the definition of who a vagabond is, and is telling the story about them. So check it out. I'm so excited. Like Tese, been so hyped.
Yes. We're like an 110% hype.
Oh yeah, for sure. And then there's also like the recording on like the audio recording of it, which I think is also really cool. It's almost like a performance where there are different folks that are narrating different parts of the book and different people in the book. So that's also something else to be excited about. But I really just enjoyed how Elo and how the community essentially has rallied around the release of this book, the excitement behind it, another like young Nigerian author. So there's also that.
Yes. I cannot wait to read it.
Another book on my list is Nearly All the Men in Lagos Are Mad by Damilare Kuku. Sien. I don't even care. I don't know. I literally don't know how people feel about this book, which is also a nice part about reading a book when, like, it's not, like, surrounding hype.
Hype, yeah.
Because I don't know how folks feel, but I read this one and I really enjoyed it. I talk about it on my book Instagram account, Mophie's Edition, so you can take a look over there. But really enjoyed it. Like, very easy read. Very quick as well. If you're just wanting to read something that's like gist or that's like exciting and like, you know, different in some type of way, telling stories about dating men in Lagos and all the drama and everything, because Lagos men. Yeah, that one was also really cool.
Yeah, I just started reading that one too. And like Mophie, I've been really excited to read it. And honestly, you're right from the first line. Your first line of that book draws you in. You're like, all right, what's the story going to be about? Very, very well done from Damilare, honestly. And I'm not even done reading it. So,
I love how she doesn't tell you everything at the beginning. If you notice, like, it's as the story is going, then you get to, like,
you get more information. Like,
yeah, you get more context. And I love that.
Yeah. And typically, I generally don't like that style. I don't like it in writing. I don't like it in shows. But it works. It works really well for how she's done it. And maybe it's because it's short stories.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's because of short stories that it just like flows very well. Anyways, moving on. So another thing, I've listened to the song. It's a new release. It's called Mind by Kenna and Amaria. Two again, young Nigerian. I don't know if Amaria is Nigerian, actually. I don't know Kenna is. But two young, you know, African or Black artists really like doing the damn thing. I would highly, highly recommend folks to listen to the song. It's really nice. So just plugging it.
I love the theme of your highlights. It's giving young, Black, African, talented.
Yes. I'm here for all of it.
Here for all of it. I love it.
And then the last thing to tie it all up is a new Netflix reality show called Young, Famous, and African. I feel like everybody's also talking about this one too.
Right.
And I cannot wait. It's my Saturday plan to just sit and like dig into the show.
Yeah, I don't know. I watched the trailer and I'm just like, okay, this looks very messy. And I don't even know if I'm interested in any of these characters. But I might check it out. I'm curious to hear what you think when you watch it.
Yes.
All right, on to my highlights. I only have two highlights for y'all today, but they're good ones. They're good ones. So I just saw The Batman in cinemas, I think last week or something. And it's Robert Pattinson's Batman, you know, starting his own series of movies. I love Robert Pattinson, but I don't even think you have to like him to enjoy this movie. I think if you've liked any of the Batman movies in the past, it kind of has that similar vibe. This one is a little bit more creepy, a little bit more leaning horror without like giving it away any spoilers. But I really enjoyed it. For a 3-hour movie, I was engaged.
3 hours, just so.
My dear, 3 hours. I think that's the future of movies these days, especially the superhero ones, right? I was listening to a podcast about it and they said they felt like they were watching the director's cut and not the... you know, the movie that should have gone to theaters. I'm like, yeah, I get that. There's some scenes that I think could have been shorter, but it was engaging enough that at the end of 3 hours, I was telling myself, it didn't really feel like 3 hours. So fun watch, Robert Pattinson, Batman, superheroes, all the good things.
I really want to watch like superhero movies, and then the length of the time, yeah, I'm just it like... tells you. Why, guys? Come on. But I feel like film and movie heads will be like, yes, like it's so great that it's 3 hours, because I don't know why, but yeah.
I mean, yeah, sometimes. Like, I was happy that Avengers Endgame was 3 hours because I wanted to spend time with those guys for as long as possible. I'm like, okay, you guys need to wrap this up in a way that makes me happy. And if that takes you 3 hours, fine. For something like Batman, especially after, I'm like, it could have been 2 hours and 20 minutes, you know. Didn't have to get to the 3-hour mark, but yeah. All right. My next highlight is food, and it's food from All I Do Is Cook. And if you're a Nigerian living in the diaspora in the US, I think they all should ship to Canada.
Mm-mm,
no, okay. US. Dang, only the US. Yeah, okay. So for my US listeners, if you've not heard of All I Do Is Cook, they're like a Nigerian kind of food delivery service, and they have a bunch of really good dishes that they freeze and then send to people that order whatever. There's like stew and soups and meat pie and puff puff. And I really enjoy getting their food. But up until last month or so, I had never had their okra. I had never had their okra soup. And I'm sorry, at the risk of being very dramatic, it has changed my life. I really, really enjoy it. It's so delicious.
I'm screaming.
It tastes like my mommy's okra. And I think that's what makes me really, I think that's what's endearing me to it. It reminds me of my mom's okra. And okra is one of the, like, when my mom asked me what I want her to cook, I almost always want her to make okra first. So anyway, really good. If you've never ordered from them before, order their okra. And yeah, thank me later.
I've had your mom's okra, and I would say that it really, like, I feel like I was a fan of okra before, but I feel like after having it, like, it shot up to being like my favorite soup.
Yeah, man, my mom throws down okra. She really does. She really does. And she can never tell me exactly how she makes it, which is stressful to me because I feel like okra is one of the easiest soups to make. So I could be making it. My mom is like, I have to be in the kitchen with you. I can't tell you what I do.
Give out her secret.
She's not. I'm like, pass it down. Let the okra go through generations, okay?
Like, but yes, I've heard good things about All I Do Is Cook. That's one thing I'm trying. Like, I'm like, I can't wait for them to start delivering to Canada so that I can try out their stuff.
Yeah. Their stuff is quite good. I think I'm at the point where I'm just impressed. For you to freeze food and send it across. I think this is coming from Houston. I'm in California. And it still arrive fresh and delicious. It's a feat. And shout out to them, man.
Yes.
Really well done.
Shout out to the All I Do Is Cook team.
Yes. All right. That is it for me, for my highlights. Mofi, do you have anything else you want to say to the peeps?
No, I don't.
All right. Thank you all so much for hanging with us for this episode. If you've made it this far, we'd love for you to go ahead and subscribe to Our Favorite Things on Apple Podcasts. And favorite is spelled with a U. We're also on Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you listen. Listen, bookmark, share with your friends, and follow us on socials as well. We're on Instagram and Twitter at @OurFavePods. Mofi, where can everybody find you?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Ms. Badmus, and on Instagram at Ms. Badmus and Mofi's Edition.
Yes, and y'all can find me on Instagram and Twitter at TIIESE. You can also read my travel blog, samefootprints.com. Until next time, y'all, be kind, stay safe, and don't forget to find something to be grateful for.
Bye.